Hey guys, this is Fired Up, and my name is G, and I'm glad you're here tonight. We're going to have another episode where we dive into the swamp of Washington. Sounds so fun. But we're going to do it with a twist of humor, because let's face it, with the sorry state of the swamp, we don't laugh, we just might cry. So tonight, we're going to tackle two of the biggest buzzwords in this week's political drama in D.C., USAID and tariffs. So let's start with USAID. Some people call it US aid, which sounds like it should be all about spreading goodwill and cheer and flowers and democracy and feeding the poor. But apparently to Trump, it should be renamed USASD, the US Agency for Squandering Dollars. So at USAID, these unelected bureaucrats have been accused of waste, corruption, apparently funding a DEI musical in Ireland, because nothing says effective foreign aid like a Broadway show in Dublin. I thought this money was funding some food for starving people in third world countries, but thanks to Trump, we found out it was funding an all-you-can-eat corruption buffet. So in a move that's part fiscal conservatism, part reality TV drama, Trump gutted the agency, put up a website, said you guys are all fired and you guys can go on an extended coffee break. But not before a federal judge stepped in saying, hold your horses, Mr. Not My President, giving those workers a temporary reprieve. And speaking of reprieves, we will also talk about tariffs. Trump's been playing tariff poker like he's got a royal flush, announcing them on Canada and Mexico and China. But at the poker table, he says, I'll show you my cards later. Because he's giving them a 30-day grace period. It seems like an episode of The Apprentice, right? Like, I should fire you now, but you got one more week to impress me. I don't do good Trump impressions. But, yeah, this tariff reprieve has markets breathing a sigh of relief, but it's also got investors on their toes, wondering, am I dancing with the devil? Or am I just at a very confusing prom where I hope my date's really one of the binary genders? I just don't want my date to end with a bad surprise. So we've got USAID going from aid to ado, and tariffs are like the Terminator, a better sequel than the first. So grab your talkies and let's get right to it. All right, so we've got two guests today, and many of you guys have seen Jamie Miller before, and we have a new guest, Jennifer. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
You going first?
Yeah, I'm Jamie Miller, my better half, Jennifer Bash. We have a podcast, Reasonable Arguments. You can find us on all the platforms, and I have a Substack of that same name, and I'm a long-term 30-year political consultant, author, public speaker, and all-around good guy.
I can vouch for that. Can Jennifer?
I think I have to now, right? Aren't we live? So I am married to a political expert. I am the least political person that I know. And I am an author also. I wouldn't call myself that, but I guess when you put out a book, they call you an author automatically. So I'm here to bring the entertainment and probably teach people things that they may not necessarily find out. I don't know.
Well, see. I'm an elected official to a school board, so they call me politician, and I don't like that either. But I guess that's the term that I'm called. But all right, well, let's get to it. We got two big topics and then hot takes at the end. Draining the swamp abroad. Trump, Musk, and USAID shakeup. And I'm sure that us two, or us three, and the audience are not surprised when we hear that our tax dollars are funding these huge liberal projects that just drain money here in America. But it's not surprising to find out that our tax dollars are funding projects overseas. And I think a lot of Americans, they knew that was happening, but what it was funding has been extremely shocking. So let's talk about USAID. It's the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, which was founded in 1961 under John F. Kennedy. And its goal was to advance democratic values, promote peace, support prosperity worldwide. And, you know, just like just about any government agency, many times they start off, you know, with good intentions, and then it just gets bloated and bigger and bigger. And so this agency engages in disaster relief, economic development, health programs, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it's supposed to represent a U.S. commitment to humanitarian aid, but there's been a lot of controversy, right? Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, although I think he's not been so visible lately, they said, let's cut the fat in government. And Elon Musk, you know, known for being so politically correct, said, USAID is a criminal organization and time for it to die. And so I don't know. Have you guys heard of USAID before this week? Because I'm Until it became news, I haven't heard much about it.
Because I will tell you, I have never heard of USAID before all of this happened. And something you said about the American people knew about this and knew where money was going. I mean, who's approving $15 million to give condoms to the Taliban? Like, how does that even happen? Anybody approve it? How does anybody sit in a room and even agree to that? I don't even understand.
Right. No, and Jamie, have you heard about that? I know you're more
So USAID has been around a long time. I call it, regardless of party, I call it the political consultants, you know, Foreign Vacation Act. you know, regardless of your party, you get in, and as a general rule, it's like, hey, if I don't have another job, they send you over to USAID, and it's like, oh, go to Uzbekistan, or, you know, go to Uganda, or pick a country and take American goodwill there for 3 years. And, you know, you're an expat, you make a good salary, you don't pay taxes, you have travel expenses on the federal government. So, you know, it's a pretty good gig if you can get it. And so, yes, I have heard of it before. And, you know, I think one of the things is, like you said, G, you know, all these things start with good intentions, and then one administration takes a little bit of an advantage. The next administration, instead of taking that advantage away, they just say, oh, I want that advantage plus another one. And now here we are 50, you know, years later and 60 years later. And, you know, we see the explosion in expenses and really how, you know, extreme liberal domestic politics was being carried to all corners of the world. This was not carrying democracy. You know, the Biden administration, and I expect that this started with the Obama administration, where they started taking extreme liberal policies to every corner of the world, and it's inexcusable, and Donald Trump's doing the right thing by stopping it.
Yeah, and when you talked about foreign vacations, and I'm sitting here wondering, how do we fund things in Dublin and, like, nicer places in the world? And people must have gotten sick of going to Uganda, right? So it's like, okay, well, I think
if your family in Ireland, you'd rather be assigned to Ireland, right?
Right.
But who's making the decisions on this? I mean, it's not one person, right? You have a group of people making these decisions.
Yeah, I mean, I believe, Jamie, we talked before the show about this, right? Congress basically allocates money to these different projects.
Yeah, and then they get bloated, or, you know, there's administration within USAID, and then they a certain amount of this money is allocated by Congress for a higher level. Here's the project, USAID brings it down, and here's the program, right? And so some of these programs are specifically mentioned in bills in Congress, and some of them are built and manipulated at the USAID level,
right? And again, I'm sure bureaucrats, I mean, you know, pay me on the back end and I can shuffle a little more money your way, or at least lobby for it. I'm sure there was a lot of that going on as well. But we have Donald Trump coming in saying we've got to cut the deficit and we've got to make government more efficient. And I'm sure at some point Elon Musk is looking at that going, what does this department really do nowadays? And armed with Trump saying, okay, well, you know, here's the three guiding principles, right? Reduce and reallocate money. Reduce spending and reallocate money. And then put America first. Whatever we spend has to put America as the number one beneficiary of whatever we spend. And then conditional aid, which goes with America first. We'll give you money, but it needs to benefit us, which I think is I mean, why else would we give away money? So some recent actions he's done is foreign aid freeze, immediate halt on most foreign aid, senior officials on leave, you know, go on your little extended coffee break and merge USAID under the State Department, which, you know, gives it under one of the cabinet's oversight, which I think will be good. Layoffs. And what I thought was funny is the website and social media just went down. There's just a one page, right? Like,
you're done.
You guys no longer have jobs.
It was funny because I looked up a news source while I was writing one of my Substack newsletters, and I was like, oh, I clicked on it, and it said, you know, went to USAID, and it was like, and it was actually data that I was using to prove why USAID should go away, and yet it was on their website, and it was gone. Like, it was just like, sorry, Charlie, this one's no longer in service. Like, okay.
You have to use the Wayback Machine to look at archive, the webpage from last week. What do you guys think? So Trump comes in. This is pretty radical. We haven't seen this in maybe a century where things are just cut immediately. Is Trump being too radical, or is this promises made, promises kept?
This is typical business. I mean, if you, any corporation, you bring in new leadership, that's the first thing they're going to do. They are going to cut out everything that is unnecessary and start over. And so this is exactly why we need a businessman as a leader, because the politicians born and bred screw it up. They just screw it up. And he is born for business, and he's doing exactly what should be done.
You know, the interesting thing is Democrats are now losing their mind. They're like, Elon Musk has the keys to the kingdom. And the truth of the matter is Donald Trump telegraphed this as he was campaigning. And the American people voted for it. They voted for Elon Musk. They voted for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. They voted for Tulsi Gabbard. They voted for Vivek Ramaswamy to be involved in our federal government and dismantling some of these DEI and socially liberal programs. That, like Jennifer said, you know, unless you're a wonk and you're watching TV or reading news all day, like me and maybe you, G, you know, Jennifer doesn't sit around. She's never heard of USAID. And I think most Americans probably before this week had, if they had heard of it, they knew very little about it. It's like, oh, it sounds great. You know, spread democracy. And, you know, and here's the deal is that there probably are some programs at USAID that we need to renew. And because we can't let the rest of the world, Africa, South America in particular, just be left over to the Chinese, because they will fill the gap. And so whether it's through USAID or whether it's through the Department of State, and I agree with it going under Department of State, a cabinet level scrutiny. And so, you know, but we have to, the term I've used is we have to prune it to the root. Like if you're doing your spring, you know, shrubbery, sometimes, you know, you have 70% of the plant might have died over the winter and 30% of it's still there and good. Well, you cut it all the way down to the root. And because the only way to save the 30% is to cut it down and let it flourish. And so, you know, if these programs are worth saving, trust me that Donald Trump, Marco Rubio, and others will put them back in place.
Yeah. And there are some programs that are actually good programs, if not for helping people on a humanitarian basis, but for preventing a vacuum, which can be filled by other players in this world, which we'll talk about that a little later. But it's important that we're also there so that we have the goodwill towards us, right? And we have access to those natural resources that country can trade with us. But let's focus on for now some of the absurd things that USAID have funded. And I gave you guys a list. What stands out to you out of that list of things that just completely absurd?
Well, one of the things that bugs me, and I did write this also in the Substack, is the number of domestic programs. This is supposed to be an international aid and, you know, carrying democracy. And yet, you know, they're now complaining that millions in income to Midwest farmers for, you know, peas are going to be affected and impacted because they somehow were getting money from USAID. I listed some programs in California. Certainly there were some universities, University of South Florida, Florida International University, that were receiving programs, money from USAID. And so, you know, you start going through, like, these are supposed to be international programs, and somehow this money's being spent domestically, number one. So to me, that should be under a whole different agency or program, period, the end. You know, but now we know that, you know, there's been funding for, you know, we've all heard about the transgender comic book in Peru, which is just, why are we taking these extreme liberal policies and presenting them as basic democratic principles is beyond me. Why the federal government was paying for that is ridiculous. $38 million in grants that indirectly supported research at the Wuhan Institute. We all know how that went, and destroyed our economy and destroyed Donald Trump's chance at a second term. Trans care clinic in Vietnam. What, I mean, you just kind of shrug your shoulders like, what? Like, what are we?
But how do we even know that that's truly where the funds are going?
Right.
I mean, how do we not know that they're, you know, training their military and everything like that? How, who's monitoring this?
Well, we know that in Wuhan they developed a virus that either escaped or was, you know, intentionally inflicted on the world. And so we spent $38 million to help develop it. And so you have to assume that some of this money, if not a lot of it, you know, you go back and you start looking at, you know, and I haven't done the research. I've seen the tweets of, you know, all these USAID programs funnel here and then funnel there, and it ends up in the Bill and Hillary Clinton library, and Chelsea Clinton ends up making $38 million, right? And so that's happening everywhere. People are like, how does a politician become worth $100 million? How does Nancy Pelosi become worth $100 million? Well, I guess if you're getting money funneled a dozen different ways through government programs.
She's the director of the DEI musical.
Yeah.
We have a question here. Sure, the Chinese will try to fill in, but they're already there. Another discussion. But what about countries in Europe, Asia, North and South America? That's a good question. We'll get to that in a little bit. But, you know, staying on topic about this, I mean, I thought, I don't know if you guys saw Ted Cruz was questioning, I forgot who the lady was. I think she was from the NIH. And he asked her, did any of this money go to the lab in Wuhan? And she looked at him and said, none of this money went to the gain of function for coronavirus. Like, okay.
Oh, my God.
Right.
That's like what my kids do. I said, did you eat the cookies? And they're like, I did not eat anything from the refrigerator. Like, wait, what?
Right.
That's not what I asked. And so she finally had to admit, because Ted Cruz rightfully pushed her. And, I think there's a lot of butt covering going on, right? And Jennifer, you had mentioned the condoms to Gaza, which was later debunked as a misrepresentation. The actual ad was for broader medical services, but that was $50 million. So
yeah,
the question is, what really did that go to? They said it went to condoms, but then it went to broader medical services. I'm sure some of them went, but.
Well, and now we know that the condoms are being used in warfare, right? They blow them up with helium and carry detonative devices. So condoms in particular are.
Is that for real?
That is for real. And so.
So maybe we funded them with new arms, right?
Yeah. I mean, not with new arms, but just very basic arms, right? Like the most basic of arms. And, you know, but that is proven that some of these groups were using these condoms for warfare. And so now we, you know, when you start looking at the amount of money we spent on them, of course we knew, somebody had to know that we were doing that, right? I mean, it puts Iran-Contra back in the 80s to shame.
The 87,000 IRS auditors that were hired, is anybody auditing this spending?
No, the 87,000 auditors are to audit us because we're cheating the government. It's not to audit the government because the government's cheating us. Like that's what those 87,000 should be. And it's funny because it seems like Elon Musk with about five kids under the age of 25, and I'd say kids loosely, but five young people under the age of 25 are the ones creating all this havoc. And everyone, you know, Democrats are saying, oh, it's an unconstitutional position. I mean, Elon Musk is operating on behalf of the president. And, you know, so of course it's constitutional. You know, it's ridiculous to think that these actions that are taking place are unconstitutional. And, you know, Democrats are throwing anything at the wall to try to get it to stop. And they're missing the mark time and time again.
No, and like you said, Elon's working, but Trump's making the final decision, right? And Elon's just saying, hey, look at this, look at that, look at this. But you're right. He doesn't have any authority to say, no, you're done. Trump just says it for him. But I have to say, like, okay, so somebody made the decision, let's create a PBS in Iraq, right? And give $20 million for a new Sesame Street show. Whatever they did there. Somebody's getting a kickback. I mean, you're hiring people to produce the show, you know, whatever it is, but the money is coming back this way when you give it that way, right? So I believe that there's a lot of fraud and corruption that goes on. Otherwise, I mean, how do you explain $30 million to WITS Health Consortium in South Africa for HIV research?
And among, lots of nepotism.
Right. Transgender individuals, right? So there's a lot of, okay, scratch my back, I'll scratch your back, or what happened in Ukraine, right? So with Zelensky, there was a lot of, I don't know, what do you call it, nepotism, whatever you would call it, with the Biden family and Ukraine and Zelensky. And I'm sure a lot of money was coming back into Hunter's pockets. So, but what do you guys think? Do you think with all of these programs – can the agency be reformed with greater oversight, even under the State Department, or does it just completely need to be abolished altogether? And I mean, what do you guys think?
Well, how does, I mean, is so Congress is the one who made all of these decisions, right, for all of these programs. Is the State Department higher than Congress? Is it, like, how does that work?
Yeah, so Congress determines how much money is spent and can create and destroy or eliminate departments. So, you know, from you would think from a constitutional standpoint, it's very hard to just say carte blanche, USAID is gone. But I think the American people, day by day, as they learn these things, they have become more and more, number one, excited about Donald Trump, because we can see that in his positive numbers going up almost daily. And secondly, they're aghast of how much and what this money is spent on. Now, and USAID is a relatively small department. Like it's a small agency. It's probably like 24th on the list of agencies as far as the amount of money spent. And so it's not a huge agency. It has about 10,000 employees. You know, but it's, the fraud was rife there. And so I do think that you could see, either Congress, especially since we Republicans hold both the House and the Senate, that they move these programs over to the Secretary of State and just have USAID as a holding place. But as of right now, as we were coming on the air, you know, I read a breaking news report that said that that Border Patrol was taking over the USAID building. So they had already taken down the sign that says USAID. They've already taken people's badges away. So, and now there's a federal injunction. A judge put in an injunction to say that, you know, Donald Trump cannot give these employees leave with pay. So it's like, oh, well, you have to go back to the office. Well, the office is already consumed by Border Patrol. So, you know, the Trump administration is moving quick. And so there's a real, Jennifer, in your eyes, it would be a real practical application problem. So if people want these programs to continue to exist, they're going to continue to exist over at the Department of State.
I think it's a good thing if it's done the right way and it's, you know, the money's allocated to decent programs that aren't just, I mean, it's crazy what's out there. And someone's monitoring it to show that it's truly not something that could come back and hurt us.
Yeah, and I believe in the end, I mean, we need to give some foreign aid, but we could probably cut the budget in half or maybe 75%. I don't know the exact numbers, but I think there is a lot of fraud and waste. And I mean, the reaction, so like you said, Trump's been in office for what, 16 days, 17 days? I mean, it's not been that much. And the reaction to what he's doing just on this one department is just, I mean, it's obviously along partisan lines, but it has been on the left side of the aisle. I mean, they've been losing their minds. Their eyes are bleeding and they're foaming at the mouth.
Conservatives have been clamoring for this type of action from Republicans for 30 years.
Right.
And, you know, Donald Trump is accomplishing it in weeks. And, you know, I've been in the trenches of Republican politics for more than 30 years and, you know, fighting these battles. And yet to see a president come in so quickly and just say, you know, I'm not taking no for an answer. And he's making it happen. And it makes me really proud that he's there.
Yeah. And he knows how the swamp works. He knows how they work, how they fight back. It's all over social media. They come out and find the microphones and the cameras and start, again, foaming at the mouths. We had Bernie Sanders, AOC, Ilhan Omar, Jamie Raskin, Elizabeth Warren, Rashid Tlaib, just to name a few that came out. What stood out to you guys with some of these responses that they had, especially towards Ilhan?
Well, I mean, the one I heard the most is that Ilhan wasn't elected for anything. Well, I mean, let's go through the hypocrisy of that. That's right. Just the most ridiculous statement ever. So,
I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of employees who work on behalf of the president who aren't elected. I mean, it's a ridiculous statement. And
is he even an employee? He's not taking a salary.
Right. Yeah, but, I mean, he's working on behalf of the president.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, no matter how you look at it, you know, he's the Peace Corps, right? He's volunteering and not getting paid. So, the reactions from the left have been insane. You know, AOC, all of them just saying they're coming up with any type of excuse saying, oh, it's unconstitutional. Oh, we're going to sue. We're going to, you know, and the fact that Democrats are suing to stop having government responsibility, stop having responsibility in government. I'm not sure that's political sand on which they want to stand, because it's going to shift under their feet really fast for the next election cycle if they're suing to stop government responsibility. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me why they obviously have not thought that one through.
No, and they're going to blow through a lot of the political capital because, again, like I said earlier, Trump's just getting started. We're talking about a small agency that goes out there and wastes money out there. But when he turns to inward and looks domestically at Department of Education, playing winners and losers with, you know, if you adopt Common Core, we'll give you federal funding. If you don't, you don't get it. I mean, their minds will really blow up at that point. So this is just getting started. And I think they need to slow down. I forget who it was, but he was warning the Democrats, slow down. Like, you guys are amped out over this. I saw AOC, she did this TikTok, I think it was, and she said Elon Musk is the dumbest person she's ever known, dumbest billionaire that she's ever known, which I find funny. I'm not going to do what the Democrats did with Pete Hegseth, saying, oh, this is a Fox News host going to be in charge of the Department of Defense and forgetting the rest of his resume. But AOC was a bartender just 6 years ago, and then she's congresswoman. So I'm sitting there going, she's just giving her enemies a lot of fodder when she's calling someone else stupid. Like, that's not good for her. So I just find that funny that, like you said, Ilhan is obviously not elected, but so were all these other bureaucrats that were put in charge of these agencies, these projects. They're not elected. We don't even know their names.
Yeah, so, anytime somebody resorts to name calling, they are giving up on the argument. And, you know, and I always say that with, you know, Republicans calling people rhinos. You know, it's like, oh, you're a rhino. Oh, okay, so, you know, now you've lost the argument because why are you calling me names instead of talking about the issue? And, you know, so we need to make sure that we let people know that Democrats stand for government, wasteful government spending on extreme liberal politics. That's what they are standing for today when they say they're suing to stop Elon Musk and Donald Trump.
Yep. So let's talk about implications for foreign policy. Is it a good idea to be completely isolationist? We know China's out there building infrastructure for countries all around the world, right? Electrical poles, internet, sewage, water, and gaining favor with those countries. I mean, is it a good idea for us to completely pull back or too drastically pull back? Wouldn't this create a vacuum? What do you guys think?
You know, I think that we'll have, you know, I think we do not need to leave a void for China to walk into. And I know that China is already around the world. You know, they're, you know, I always say there's nothing more efficient than a Chinese fishing fleet. You know, they're fishing with satellites and just pillaging the world's oceans for fish. And so the, you know, we don't have a scratch of the surface of where China is and what they're doing and trying to undermine the democracy worldwide. And so we need to ensure that we continue to help those emerging countries that are vulnerable to China. But I'm not sure that having DEI programs in, or, you know, electric vehicle stations in cities in Vietnam is the way to do it.
Yeah. What about you, Jennifer?
I really can't speak on this. I don't know enough about it. I mean, I know that China is something that we need to be afraid of, but I don't know. I honestly can't speak on it.
Well, I think part of what Trump was doing with Greenland is shows that he's not going to completely pull back. I mean, he does want to expand America's influence, which I think is great. But like Linda here says, like, what about the countries in Europe, Asia, and North and South America? I mean, China is trying everywhere. I mean, they had a little foothold in Panama, and Rubio went down there and put a kibosh on that. So it is going to be a cat and mouse game with China trying to gain influence over these countries, especially where we need the rare earth minerals and some of the raw resources to fund our lifestyle. And then that country in return needs wealth and prosperity. So I don't think it's a good idea to completely pull back, but transgender operas, no, that's not, no one's getting any goodwill. And I bet anyone who attended those operas has no idea that we paid for it.
And it's probably the opposite of
I need to step away for 1 second. I'm sorry. The dog is going insane.
The transgender operas could actually be a negative impact in some of these countries. And so we need to be careful about how and what we spend money on.
Yeah, agreed. So let's move on to the tariffs, because that we just can't keep up with the news. I mean, it's just amazing. I worked on this with William on Sunday, and Monday it's like, okay, well, we got to change everything. But let's talk about tariffs. Trump's bold move protecting America by taxing fentanyl's pathways. And on last Saturday, Donald Trump escalated his trade policy by announcing significant tariff hikes, imposing a 25% on imports from both Mexico and Canada, excluding Canada's energy. I think that's not a good idea to increase tariffs on there. And then China was only a 10% tariff because we already had tariffs on there. And we have Big John, the producer, jumping in.
I figured I'd jump in on the very libertarian topic of tariffs while Jennifer is off attending to something until she gets back. So you know, if you want, I could either stay with you and annoy you with my libertarian opinion on tariffs, or we can.
No, this wait. That will get us a little more fired up to.
Okay, you know, let's do it then.
Hey, that's the name of the show.
So Donald Trump put these tariffs into effect, and my friends who are left-leaning, they just blew up my phone saying we're about to go into a depression. Smoot-Hawley, which, yes, Smoot-Hawley Act in 1930 did make the Great Depression happen pretty much. But we found out on Monday morning, First Mexico says, we got 30 days, and we're sending troops to the border, and we're going to stop the drug flow and then remain in Mexico, catch and release in Mexico. You can do that. You don't have to catch and release on your side. And my friends started saying, oh, yeah, whatever. Trump caved, and Canada's still there. And then what was it, 4 hours later, Canada, Trudeau comes out and says, oh, well, we're not going to have tariffs for 30 more days. Okay, so I thought that was interesting. What were you guys' thoughts on that whole exchange?
I spoke to an international economist, and you know, he's like, yeah, it's not gonna be good for anybody, but the truth of the matter is they're gonna run out of goods before we do, right? And so, you know, they're more dependent on us than we are them, and so it's going to be tougher on Canada and Mexico than it is going to be on us. And not that I agree with tariffs, but I do think that from the very beginning, when Donald Trump started talking tough about tariffs and using that as kind of a foreign policy tool, you know, everybody on the right was suggesting, well, that's him being a negotiator. And that is exactly what it's turned out to be, is to get people to the negotiation table, to quit taking advantage of us, and we'll see how the proof will be in the pudding. We'll see how it works out.
So did you think one side caved and the other didn't? Do you think Trump caved? Do you think Mexico caved? Do you think Trudeau caved? What's your thought on that?
As a general rule, though, I think they're going to have this thing where, you know, the politicians don't, you know, Sun Tzu has written for about 1,000 years, give your defeated opponent an honorable retreat. And so it's never a good look when you're winning and you're rubbing somebody's nose in it, right? And so you always want to try to say, hey, listen, yeah, we brought people to the table, we gave a little, we got a little, and here we are. But the big thing is, you know, I think Donald Trump has his eyes on the big thing, which is immigration and fentanyl, and I think he's going to win on the big things.
Yeah, gee, this is horrible because, and I understand that some people are saying, hey, it's not the tariffs, it's Trump, he's the master of the deal, it's the art of the deal, he's a negotiator, he's a businessman, he's a bully is what it is, right? Like, growing up in the Bronx, I used to love negotiating with kids that were half my size, right? And I would grab them by the neck and squeeze their neck until they agreed to my terms, right? That's negotiating. I didn't actually choke them, I negotiated with them, right? Picture the size of the U.S. economy. Now, from Jamie's right. From an economic point of view, we know there's no argument. Tariffs inherently hurt the country that imposes them. There's no doubt about that. It's indisputable. Lord George in the late 19th century had a great line. He said, "Tariffs accomplish in peacetime to ourselves what we would do to our enemies during war." It's been known for hundreds of years, going back to Adam Smith. Tariffs fail economically. The question is, should they be used as a tool either for foreign policy or to use the polite term, for negotiations? I happen to think the answer is no. Eventually, all this comes around, and it stems from the failed notion that trade deficits are inherently wrong. Right? So we seem to be under this mistaken economic truism that if I buy more from you, G, and you don't buy an equal amount from me, somehow I'm losing at this game, which is ridiculous. When I go to my local Kroger's or my ShopRite, there's a trade imbalance. I give them all sorts of money. They haven't once paid for advertising space on Fired Up.
And I agree with that. Here's a good example. If gas was $10 a gallon, I would still be buying gas because it's better than walking 6 hours to go that 1 gallon.
Right. As long as you have a choice, then there's nothing wrong with it because then all sides benefit. All trade is mutually beneficial when it's free. When it's coerced, yeah, look, Mexico may smile. They may be sent 10,000 troops. Who knows what they'll do? Canada capitulated, right? But again, these are things that have long memories, right? People are not going to forget that you bullied them. People are not going to forget that this is a negotiating tool in some weird annexation of Canada that I keep hearing of. You want them to be our 51st, right? I mean,
I hope they don't forget. You know, because, you know, they should remember that we're the biggest economy in the world, and they should, you know, treat us with some level of respect and not take advantage of us on every chance they get. The big example is, you know, solar panels made in China that are subsidized by the Chinese government to basically run solar panel companies and their technology, you know, from being developed in the United States. And they do this on dozens of things, not maybe hundreds of things. And so, you know, when you start saying, well, the tariffs aren't necessarily, you know, I agree with you in a perfect world, John, but you have a communist country that's trying to take over the world through all these means, right? And so they're trying to diminish our ability to influence the world through these things as well. And so we have to protect ourselves, and I think tariffs are one of the ways to do that.
Well, the protection is the issue, right? Because what helped bring down the Soviet Union? It wasn't tariffs, it wasn't embargoes, it was the free flow of American jeans and Coca-Cola and rock and roll and things that the Russian people could not get their hands on. That's what helped bring down the Steel Curtain. And the same thing applies here. Like, why are we – so think about what tariffs do. They protect a favored political group in the United States at the expense of all the American taxpayers. So even if you were to make an argument to me like, hey, the solar panel companies in the U.S. are suffering, why should the government subsidize the U.S. solar companies and have the American people pay for it? During the first round of the Trump administration, when he subsidized, I think it was lumber, right? Or when he put tariffs on lumber, I think. Or when he put tariffs on import exports of soybeans, I think. What did he have to do immediately afterwards? 6 months, very quietly. He had to get Congress to pass subsidies for U.S. farmers because their market bottomed out. So the American taxpayer ends up paying twice, once through inflation and twice through subsidization for things that only benefit a select few in this country. So even if you thought that was the case, why are we – like it's no different than if a Democrat said, I'm collecting your taxes to subsidize DEI or I'm collecting your taxes to subsidize PBS. Literally no difference with that. But that's my opinion. I think free trade, even if it seems like it's temporarily disadvantageous, Jamie, I think that eventually that works out in the better. And this used to be a Republican thing, right?
Disagreeing with you. Yeah. I'm just disagreeing with you on the finer details of it potentially being more of a foreign policy issue than a trade issue.
Fair enough. And I guess the question is, does then that mean that the foreign policy of the U.S. is to be the kid with the big stick, the kid that grabs the smaller kid by the throat?
I don't think there's any question that we have to be that.
Okay.
We had a comment by Linda. Let's read that real quick, and then
which one?
Yep, fired up.
Oh, there you go.
Nothing to do with quid pro quo and products, but an opening of the shores. Not flooding our markets to drive Americans and industries. The government must protect American industries. So, like Temu, right? Temu is a Chinese company, and they're going to Amazon and copying their stuff and selling it to us for a buck instead of 10. So. You know, there is a – we don't want
intellectual
to be
flooded
with this cheap Chinese crap. William,
well, intellectual property – what I was saying, you know, if they're violating international intellectual property, you know, then that's a whole other issue.
That's a different issue, right. So, that's a different issue, yeah.
So I have to jump in here because Big John sees it from one side.
The correct side. I see it from the correct side. That's the difference.
I'm just going to say, see what Jennifer caused?
Yeah, right. It's all Jennifer's fault.
Before William goes on, just to let the audience know, William and John go back 25, 30 years. So this is a brotherhood fired up discussion here.
So John's talks about one side, America being the bully, America being the bully.
I think we have to be the bully right now because we were the doormat for 4 years. So we have to be the bully.
China floods their the market here. The solar panels is a great example of why they purposely flood the market with inferior solar panels, completely undercut American products to drive them out of business. They tried this with the steel industry as well. So who is the real bully? Tariffs used as part of your quiver as an arrow to sit there and stymie that is not only not being a bully, it's necessary to protect American industry and jobs. Life is not fair. You know, Temu is another example. They get under that law. There's that loophole, and they flood the market. My wife, I told her, your Temu orders are going to the wayside. She said, oh, well, now about the pricing, John's wrong again. So you see, the problem with John, he likes to make blanket statements, and that's not how life works. So, for example, the jewelry industry will mark up their products anywhere, and I searched this out, like anywhere from 300 to a couple thousand percent. The hairstylist industry, of which my wife is part of, will jack their prices up 300 and 400%. They don't have to take a loss. Then you also had the situation where there are other products. It's like Chuck Schumer, Corona beer, which is actually my favorite beer. But if Corona gets overpriced, I'm looking at Modelo. I'm looking at a different brand. So you have all of that. And to add some flavor to this, China, when they first started coming into our country with their products and services, they were like at 1% control of the GDP or something of that nature. They're like up to nearly 20% now in terms of their export. And that, hold on, that is because of a lack of tariffs allowing them to flood the market, allowing them to have their way. So tariffs, and Reagan was wrong on that. You know, on the short term, he may have been right. The long term, we've seen what America has allowed China to become. And finally, nobody wants tariffs long term. Big John talks about it as if we're going to have tariffs for the next 50 years. You use tariffs as a tool in your quiver, and then you use it most definitely as Trump is a negotiating tool. And both Jamie and Big John are wrong. This government that's in power right now, Canada, they're going to be gone. In 10 years, you know, so
but
they will
going to be gone in two months.
Yeah. So same thing with the presidency, you know, so everything is cyclical. And with that, I just had to jump on in here and give a couple of
steps. I'll give John the second
truths.
Yeah, I'll give John the second to last word. And then we'll have one last question on the tariffs.
Here's the thing. I don't know whatever happened to conservatives. I don't know how conservatives can consistently say we want limited government, we want smaller government, and yet they want the government, the most inefficient, worthless entity on the face of the planet, to control markets, to control businesses, to control pricing, as if they have any clue what market should be and what pricing should be. It is inconceivable to me that I sit here and talk to conservatives who would otherwise say, get the government out of everything. We don't trust the government to set a minimum wage. The correct minimum wage, I hope all of us can agree, is zero. It should not be set at anything. However, we can make that argument, but we somehow seem to think that we should define what American businesses make. It happened with the, I know, control and not protect. That's just verbiage right now. It's the same concept. It happened with American car manufacturers in the late 70s. You have to protect us. Put tariffs on those Japanese cars. Lee Iacocca spent more time in Washington than he did running his company. Milton Friedman did a whole thesis on this. He advised Ronald Reagan on this. That's why William thinks Reagan was wrong. He had a libertarian economic advisor. He had Milton Friedman showing him what to do in turning around the economy. So that's the way I put it. Like it seems like you're protecting the American companies. But I have to ask you, should American companies be protected if they're not providing the best service at the lowest cost for the American consumer? And that's what free trade, that's what open markets accomplish. And with that, I will jump off, G, because this is not a libertarian hour. It's a conservative hour.
It's good to get a little bit of fired up discussion here. But I will say one last thing is, I'm a conservative. I believe in free trade, but I also believe, and I was having whiskey with my friend, liberal friend, around a fire pit. He said, I believe in free trade as well, but I believe in fair trade. And I looked at him and I said, I agree with that too. If you slap tariffs on us, we should slap tariffs on you. Ideally, that should be 0%, but if it's 10%, we should get there. Now, I hope it doesn't get out of control, but...
Yeah. Friedman and Sowell actually did a study on that, and they said that even if tariffs are unilaterally imposed on the U.S., the U.S. still comes out ahead by not reciprocating tariffs. But that being said, I will drop off. Peace, everyone. And Jamie, it's all love. You know that, man.
Absolutely.
No matter how much we argue, it's all love. So
I didn't think it was an argument.
Big John, just yes. Stay on because we're going to do hot takes here in just a minute. But
okay, sure.
One last question on the tariffs. So do you think the tariffs will actually go into effect in 30 days or 28 days now? Do you think that will happen? Or do you think Mexico and Canada will fulfill their end of what they said, patrolling the borders, stopping the drug flow into America, and Trump will indefinitely suspend them?
I think they're seeing everything that he's doing, and they're going to have to make a move.
Jamie? By make a move, what do you mean?
They're going to have to conform to what we want. Or he's going to come after them. I mean, he's proven he's not stopping. 17 days in. I mean,
I'm going to agree with Jennifer, not because she's my wife, but because she's right.
Can you mark this on the tape, please, Dave?
It is recorded on YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, Pandora. That's what William Moses says.
Yeah.
Big John.
Look, will they work? Yes, but here's the problem. I think he's going to find it that it worked too easy for him, and all of a sudden it becomes a hammer for every situation. It's the metaphorical using a sledgehammer to kill a fly, right? So will he be using this at every turn? That's the question, and I think eventually it's going to come back to bite us in the rear as we find ourselves embroiled in trade wars, especially if he starts slapping them on Europe as well. Because he's threatening that as well. What does Linda have to say? Someone tell that guy who jumped on not to look like a bum. Damn, dude, at least look presentable. Is that me? I'm assuming that's me. But okay. But, yeah, so will it work? Yes. I'm afraid it'll work too easy, and it'll get expanded, unfortunately.
To be fair to William, he was not going to come on, but he's one of the producers of the show. Great guy. But that was a last-minute thing. So,
yeah.
All right, let's move on to Fired Up Quick Hits. So I'm going to ask a few questions here. Say yes or no.
Hey, G, before we get to that, Linda asked a question, or she made a comment. And it said, sounds like Jamie's been called a rhino a few times. And I would just say, Linda, I've been in politics for 30 years. I've been called a lot of things. Rhino's the least of them.
That's the best one we could put up that's still user-friendly, family-friendly,
exactly
Jamie.
That's exactly right. Well,
here's the thing. I'm an elected official, so people to the left of me call me like, oh, he's that damn conservative. People to the right of me, which it's hard to get that much right of me, call me a rhino. It's like – and I stay
I was going to say, gee, you know what's a good day for a libertarian? When you make one tweet and half of them say you're a damn socialist and the other one says you're a damn Nazi. That's a good day for a libertarian. Off the same tweet, 50% think you're a Nazi, 50% think you're a socialist. So I feel you on that.
Perfect
one.
Equilibrium.
All right, so quick hits. So the idea is I'm going to ask a question and you give a yes or no answer and you can explain briefly, like one or two sentences, why you think the way you think. So the first question is, can Doge and Elon Musk attempt the impossible and defund or spin off both NPR and PBS? Let's start with Jamie.
Yes, I do. I think that, we've been wanting, we've said forever that a media company can't be owned by a foreign country for more than 20%. And so why we're still funding these media companies with federal dollars to indoctrinate one point of view is beyond me.
Jennifer.
I didn't even know this until I read your notes. But hearing what Jamie just said, I would agree. I would agree. I don't think that we need to have, they need to be separated for sure.
Yeah. Big John.
Of course, it should be gone. It's not a pillar function of government. Both of them should be gone. The government should not be in the propaganda business.
Yeah, it looks like Big Bird's going to be roadkill. I think it's going to happen, finally. I remember, was it Romney in one of the debates said, we're going to make PBS go private? Look, I don't know if anybody watches it anymore. And there's so much content on YouTube and Rumble. Let's move on to number two. PBS and NPR were created to diversify media with non-commercial news and culture, meaning news and culture without commercials. But with today's media, with cable, streaming, and internet, is it really needed? Do we even need NPR or PBS?
I didn't even realize they were still around.
Or let's start with Jennifer.
Sorry. Yeah, I didn't even realize they were still around. I mean, I remember PBS when they had like the – didn't they have like the dollar – cassettes or something back in the day. Yeah, that's what I remember.
Yeah, Big John.
Look, I grew up watching a lot of stuff on PBS. My favorite thing would be, what was it, Sunday mornings, waking up early, getting a bagel and a New York regular and watching William F. Buckley on Firing Line tear apart his liberal opponents. And you know, and it was something that you could watch and learn from. The children's programming, of course, is what PBS really became famous for, right? The Sesame Street, the Electric Company, all that stuff. Is it needed? Yes, in some form. But the question is, should it be something that's funded by the government? And at its core, the answer is no, it should not be.
Americans were exposed to Doctor Who on PBS by Linda. Jamie.
You know, I'm not sure that Doctor Who was a good thing for Americans to be exposed to, but, you know, my kids love Barney, right? And the problem with PBS is that they would set up these secondary, you know, corporations to do the merchandising. So every time I bought a Barney, you know, lunchbox or t-shirts or whatever, pajamas, bed sheets, all of those things that you buy that are Sesame Street and Barney, they aren't. You know, they don't go to fund PBS. They go to this separate corporation. So it is a for-profit corporation, just, you know, funded initially by the government, and it's wrong.
Yeah, and now that I'm thinking about this question, I should have asked, will it survive? Not really is it needed, but will it survive? Because now when you're relying on commercials, now you rely on how many eyeballs are watching. I tried to get my kids to watch Barney and Sesame Street, and with today's high octane cartoons, I mean, they're bored to tears. And obviously NPR is left wing, so I don't think it will survive. It's not needed.
Well, you know what it is, they may have to adapt, you know, like the newspapers. They may just have to adapt, so they may become a content producer instead of a network. They may just become the equivalent of a production house where they produce children's programming and then it gets distributed on streaming platforms or commercial TV or whatever. So their business model may have to adapt with the times. And what's wrong with that?
That's absolutely true. So that's a good point. Number three, did Joe Biden's team sign him with Creative Arts Agency and to create an illusion of mental sharpness, even as the mainstream media and his supporters now openly acknowledge the cover up of his cognitive decline? So the CAA is basically an agency to market you, what do you call it? An agent, right?
That will they're say, talent agents. Yeah. They're yeah. talent agents. They're right.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. So let's start with Jamie.
I don't think we're going to see a lot of Joe Biden appearances on network television the way we saw Michelle Obama, for instance, you know, so, you know, I think that Joe Biden's days are, his cognitive skills have failed him. His best days are behind him, unfortunately. You know, I wish him the best of health and a long life, but I don't know that him being represented by a talent agent is going to do him serve him well.
Jennifer.
I would think the agency would have been for like a stunt double, because I don't even believe that he was in half of the things that they were showing, so.
So it can get up the stairs to the plane.
Exactly.
Big John.
I think it's genius. I mean, if you get him the right roles, how great would that be? Like, can you picture him doing the hippy dippy weatherman, sort of like a reincarnation of George Carlin's bit, where it's like, hey, here to tell you the weather tonight, it's Joe Biden, and hey, man, what's going on? You know, like,
I was thinking more of the Naked Gun 33 and a third or whatever it was.
Yeah. So yeah, look, I think this is just, you're right, it's PR. No, it's not. I don't think it's to rehabilitate his image as much as it's like get him a chance to monetize whatever few years he's got left.
And so I think the answer is yes, but I think his library is the motivation. I think he pissed off a lot of Democrats at the end with the pardons, going back on his word, and obviously conservatives are not going to donate to it. So I think he's going to try to get money for that library. All right, Chuck Todd, departure from NBC News, and his criticism of the media is, okay, well, we need to build media trust through local partnerships rather than going on these websites and social media and trying to game the algorithm. But is that really the reason that news media is not trusted anymore? Let's start with Jennifer.
I have no idea who this man is.
You don't watch NBC News. That's why you're so smart.
But as far as the media, the media is toxic, period. It's just toxic.
Big John.
Yeah, it's a shame because I do believe that in these things you have the pendulum, right? So I've been screaming about the media since the 70s when I was like still in high school that it was incredibly biased, right, to the left. But now I think in swinging that pendulum back, we've now achieved the opposite, which is like any conspiracy theory is considered valid, any cockamamie theory is like put out there as, you know, and then when they're disproven, what's the typical response? Hey, I'm just asking questions, right? That seems to be the typical response when you get caught with your hand in the cookie jar. You should look to new media, to alternative media, because that's where it's at now. Things change. You know, radio was, you know, newspaper was it, then radio was it, then television was it. Now it's social media. So whether we like it or not, this is the genie's been let out of the lamp. You know, we're not putting this stuff in this thing back in. It's here. We might as well learn. Now, if we could teach our young journalists to do it ethically, get to some, you know, like whether it's a school of journalism like Columbia, taking it up and putting it out and trying to get people to do things ethically, have some code of ethics. I'm down for that. But this isn't going away. Yep. He's wrong. It's not going away.
Jamie.
You know, it's Chuck Todd started his career writing for National Journal's Hotline, which turned into Politico, and he was a conservative writer. And, you know, Joe Scarborough started as a super conservative congressman. He was in Matt Gaetz's congressional district and goes to MSNBC. And so, you know, kind of what concerns me more is how much, you know, our corporate advertising is moves these folks where they have to adopt a liberal message. They have to. And so I do think that because of that and because how much the large media companies are a slave to their advertisers, that they have to, you know, they have to adapt or die, because there's so many other avenues like Fired Up where people are getting real news, real opinions, and, you know, not controlled by their advertising masters.
Yeah. And I think the real reason why people don't trust the news media is because of the bias. And so during the election season, I had to sit there and I'm looking at the polls and I'm looking at the real registration numbers. And then I watch the news and I'm like, something's off. And I had to find a little bit of an echo chamber to get some validation that what I was thinking was right. I was thinking Trump was going to win and everyone's saying no. So Chuck Todd's wrong. It's not through partnerships or algorithms. It's through bias that people are not watching anymore. So a related question, the Trump administration is pulling in these alternative media sources into the White House briefing room, the Pentagon's correspondence corridor. Is that a good move? And I think we kind of answered that, but let's just be quick on this one. Let's start with John.
Yes, absolutely. And William will tell you, there was a time when William and I had our sports companies when we weren't allowed at the press conferences. We weren't given press credentials to the games, access to the players, because they said, who are these internet guys? They're not real journalists. I remember guys at Sports Illustrated and the New York Times, like, essentially spitting on me as I walked by, like, having done nothing other than being an internet journalist, sports journalist. So my bias is very clear on this one. Yes, they should be vetted to make sure they're not, like, whack jobs or, you know, some, you know, like, crazy unhinged site. But, yes, the fact that you are an internet-only journalist should not de facto ban you from press conferences and such.
Yeah. Jennifer.
I don't have an opinion on this one. I'm sorry. I'm out.
Jamie's.
I'm not sure that the legacy media should automatically have a seat. And so I think there's enough legitimate news agencies like this one where your name gets put in a hat and you get a seat for a month, let's say. And next month you draw from the hat again and, you know, and NBC and CBS, they shouldn't automatically have a seat in the White House press room. Like, what makes them different than you, G?
Yeah. And when you think about, and I agree, the new media should be in there. When you think of Joe Rogan, I think he had 50 million watch his interview with Donald Trump, but Scarborough would barely pull 400,000. I mean, you're talking a guy on the internet is bigger, on the order of geometric orders bigger than Joe Scarborough, who I think a lot of people don't even know who he is anymore. Let's move on to, is the FBI in utter, quote-unquote, utter disarray because of Donald Trump, with agents living in terror over their pensions, healthcare, and retirement, or are they just throwing out rhetoric to make people feel sorry for them? Let's start with Jamie.
Hey, I don't think that people should be fired if they were told by higher-ups to do a job and they went and did their job as their bosses told them. You know, but I have been in a situation in politics where, somebody wants you to do something unethical and your choice is do that or quit. And I quit. And so, you know, the fact that they did these things, if they knew that they were wrong and they did them anyway, like, rifling through Melania Trump's underwear drawer, they knew damn good and well that was wrong. And so if you did that, you should be fired. If you printed out words that said things like confidential and you put them over items on Donald Trump's floor and took pictures of them, you were wrong and should be fired. And so they should live in, some of them should be living in terror because they don't deserve their jobs because they use their own partisan beliefs to conduct law enforcement activities.
Okay, so your answer is yes, they are living in terror.
And it's a great thing.
Yep. And Big John.
Well, I'm all for downsizing the government, so that part I have no issue with. Are they living in terror? Some of them probably are, but I have to agree with Jamie to some extent. I kind of had this spiel on my show about the CIA and their buyouts, so it's in the similar thing, right? There are a lot of people – see, a lot of people think that everybody at the FBI is malicious, that they're all out to get Trump, every single field agent, every single office head. No, most of them are your day-to-day nerds. People don't realize that. Like, that's the best way to describe these FBI, CIA, the overwhelming majority of these employees. They're damn nerds. They're good cryptographers. They're programmers. They're engineers. They're translators. Should the jobs be eliminated? Yes, but not because those people are evil or anti-Trump. It's just that the FBI is too big and overblown. It should be absorbed by, like, something else. Same thing with the CIA. So, yes, but not because they're anti-Trump or they're evil, for the large majority. I just think it's a matter of let's downsize it. Let's bring this government under control.
Yeah. Jennifer.
I would agree with both of them. I think they're living in terror if they know what they did was not right. And, you know, the same thing that John was saying, you know, if the department's too big and just needs to be weeded out, then that should happen too.
Yeah. And I agree. I think some of them are living in terror and they know who they are. And then mm-hmm. others have cushy desk jobs and they'll be put back in the field and they're going to do more of the hard work. And maybe that's not complete terror, but that's something I'm sure they don't want to do. They want the cushy job. So let's move on to, is AOC correct? And I can't pull up the video right now, but she basically went on TikTok and said that Elon Musk is one of the most unintelligent billionaires, the guy who created SpaceX, Tesla, et cetera, with a lack of intelligence, lack of expertise, and morally vacant. So I think this will be easy, but do you agree with AOC or not? Let's start with Jennifer.
You know, I have my own feelings about Elon Musk, but the one thing is I do not think this man is stupid at all. You know, she's scared of something, so.
Yeah. Let's go with Jamie.
Yeah, you know, I don't really wake up and go to sleep based upon what AOC says. I pretty much ignore her, as the rest of the country should as well.
Big John.
Well, let me try to be as generous to AOC as I possibly can, because after all, I've seen her in person. She's quite an attractive lady, let me say that. But I think to give her as much leeway as possible, if she's trying to say that just because you're smart at one thing doesn't automatically, that's a fallacy a lot of us have. Like, if you're a great engineer, people might think you're a great poet or that you're a great politician or whatever, right? So if you're talking from that perspective, she has a small point. Like, Elon Musk being the qualities that make him a great engineer and a great designer aren't necessarily great qualities in a politician. They're not great qualities in a bureaucrat, and they're not great qualities in a in the political world. Let's just say that.
In a president.
In a president too. Like, I would say the same thing. Like, I without setting me off, I don't think Donald Trump is particularly smart, but he has qualities that make him a good president. He's charismatic. He draws people to himself and things like that. But is he stupid? No, absolutely not. He's not a stupid man. You know, despite, even if you think he stole Tesla, quote unquote, from someone else and all that stuff, he's clearly an intelligent man. One of the, from the perspective I've always said is, we're lucky that he's living during our generation, that he's alive and producing and being productive, because I think humanity benefits from him. So, yeah, take that.
No, and you know, I seeded the question with a little bit of my bias, but no, I think Elon Musk is a genius. I think he thinks of technical things all the time, and he's really involved with the technical aspects of internet, cars, rocket ships. And AOC didn't come from that background. I'm not demeaning bartenders, but that's where she was 6 years ago. So I just think it's golden that she's talking about him like that. But I'll give AOC one thing, and people get elected because they're honest. And even though I think she's 99% wrong, she's honest.
Sincere. She's sincere.
Very sincere.
Yeah.
When she runs for president in 3 years, starts her primary, she's going to have a long runway. I think she's going to be one of the last candidates on stage. So even though I think she's a complete socialist, just look out for that. So, all right. So two more questions. If the government were to own or regulate TikTok, wouldn't it just be a social media version of NPR or PBS? Let's start with Jamie.
Yeah, you know, I'm opposed to the government owning TikTok for the same reason I mentioned PBS and NPR. You know, it's too influential of a program, and the government should not be in the business of influencing citizens.
Yeah. Jennifer.
I would agree with that.
Yep. John.
Yeah, I'm going to keep it short. Yes. Jamie's 100% correct. Yes.
Yeah. And I would agree with the government buying TikTok if it was just a way to get it off Chinese hands immediately, and then they could sell it to a private company if it's just an intermediary type of transaction. But, yeah, a permanent ownership, no, not a good idea. All right, one last question. Who wins Super Bowl 59 and why? The Philadelphia Eagles or the Kansas City Chiefs in this Super Bowl rematch from 2 years ago? Now, Jennifer, are you a sports person?
I'm a Steelers girl, so born and raised in Pittsburgh.
All right, so there you go. So you do watch football. Do you want to start with this one or let one of the other guys take it?
I am completely over Kansas City, but I, you know, I honestly think that it's a ref's game, and you know, it's going to be Kansas City. I truly believe that. And it's a whole Taylor Swift and that whole crap, all of that publicity.
You're talking to a Niners fan right here, and I know last year there was some shenanigans with the refs. Let's go to Jamie. Sure.
So, yeah, I am going to take the Eagles 24-17, which also puts me with the under. But I also believe Kansas City Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker, however you pronounce his
Butker.
Name.
Butker
yeah. will break his own record for the longest field goal in Super Bowl history. And it will be 58 yards.
Wow. All right, Big John.
It sounds like Jamie's been hitting the prop bet before he came online. Yeah, so I listen, all the metrics say the Eagles should win. There's no doubt about it. But you could tell from the Vegas line that they're still getting money on both sides, right? Because the spread is 1 point. Kansas City is a 1 point favorite. Uh-huh. So in essence, it's a push game, right? Because, you know, they're calling it even. However, in the words of the famed Chico Escuela, Kansas City been betty good to me. So for two postseasons in a row, I've fattened my wallet betting all the Kansas City games and on the right side of them. So I will have to go for the three-peat. Hey, history in the making. As much as I hate Kansas City, you can't deny their greatness. They get three in a row. They've etched their names in the history books. So I'm going to go with Kansas City on this one.
All right. So me with the last word, I agree that these are two evenly matched teams. I think last year the Niners had the advantage in the betting, if I remember correctly. And the Niners had a little better of a season. The Chiefs had the most holding calls, I think, of any AFC team last year. Surprisingly, in the Super Bowl, they had, and the 49ers couldn't overcome all their offensive holding calls. I mean, first and 20, what are you going to do? I think that's why they lost. So I'm with Jennifer on it. The refs are going to tilt ever so subtly in favor of the Chiefs for the story. And there will be – how many camera shots do you think there will be of Taylor Swift throughout the Super Bowl? I say
it'll be a couple.
Five.
Oh, yeah, more than that. More than that, yeah, definitely.
I agree with the newscaster who says, I just want to see her face when Trump comes in and the crowd erupts.
I just want everybody to make it out safe. I just want it to be in a completely uneventful Super Bowl.
All right, so Jamie and Jennifer, you guys have a podcast. Why don't you tell the audience where they can find you guys and how often you guys broadcast?
Go for it, Jennifer.
All right, so we try to do a podcast every Wednesday and Sunday, and we are video on YouTube and then audio on everywhere else, all streaming platforms. And we are Reasonable Arguments because, of course, Jamie is the political person and I am not. So there are quite a few things that we don't necessarily agree on. But we try to make it fun and we have a good time.
And you guys have Reasonable Arguments on air?
And it's reasonable Arguments, News and Nonsense. So Jennifer always brings about a third of the podcast is – I date myself by saying, you know, the Paul Harvey type of story where it's the rest of the story and, you know, kind of human interest, interesting stories. Jennifer, real quickly, tell them about the patron who was arrested in Canada.
Patron was getting unruly and was starting fights. So they took him outside and threw him down to the ground and held him there for about 20 minutes. To where his penis froze to the ground. His pants had come down because of him scuffling. He was kicking everybody. And when they pulled him up, they literally circumcised him from the sidewalk.
Oh, my. Put a tariff on that.
Wow. That was not a story I was expecting.
Talk about a freeze pop.
That escalated quickly.
We should say that our show is completely unfiltered and unedited, so whatever happens, happens. Yeah.
Well, Big John, the libertarian here, tell us about your show.
Yes, thank you, G. Every Thursday night, live streaming is free for all, where you get. I typically will be with my co-host Hody Johns, and we also have various libertarian guests. This week's guest was Lars Mapstead, billionaire libertarian who ran for the presidential nomination. Also, every Wednesday, you'll see our Liberty Lens, which is me and my co-host Mike Termott, where we just tackle one libertarian issue of the week and we kind of expand on that. So, yeah, right here at Grumblings Media, check both those out. Thank you, G.
And if you're a conservative watching and you want to have a show where you agree with half of it, that's a show to watch.
Which half, though? Which half? To quote Mr. Woolworth, which half do you agree with?
I'll sit there and watch a show, and I'm like, no.
I told you, G, if it's half, I'm doing my job.
But this is Fired Up, and we broadcast every Friday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. And you can find us on YouTube, Rumble, Pandora, and Spotify. I'm going to change it from William's tagline and Spotify because I'm not Spanish. And for me and Jamie and his wife Jennifer and Big John, we bid you adieu.